Yasura na 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 Bhajana Ranjana Jamuna Tira Vanachari Jamuna Tira Vanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabihari Jaya Radha Madhava Punjabi Hari Jai Mr. Bhad, Brother Mahan, Sibirti Gacha, Jister, Trishi, Shimad, Divine Grace, Shri, Si, Bhakti, Vedanta, Swami, Prabhupada, Ki, Jai. Iskan, Bibi, the founder, Acharya, Shri, Prabhupada, Ki, Jai. Jai, Om, Vishnu, Pad, Brother Mahan, Sibirti Gacha, Ashtotar, Trishi, Shimad, His Divine Grace. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur ki jai. Ananta Koti Vaishnavrinda ki jai. Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur ki jai. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai. Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita ki jai. Samaveda Bhaktavrinda ki jai. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glory to Sri Guru in Gauranga. So today we're going to do something a little bit special. It's advertised as Krishna Consciousness in a Nutshell. Of course, it says in the Srimad Bhagavatam that Lord Brahma holds this whole universe in his hand like a walnut. So that's a pretty big nutshell. We could go on for thousands of years describing the intricacies of Krishna Consciousness. But there is a very nice summary of Krishna Consciousness philosophy by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur is the father of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who's our own beloved Srila Prabhupada's spiritual master. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur pioneered the spread of Krishna consciousness in the modern age, beginning in the late 19th century in India. And his son, of course, took it far and wide throughout India. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur and his disciple Srila Prabhupada took Krishna consciousness all over the world. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur was a very prolific writer, a wonderful writer. And one of the books he wrote is called Jiva Dharma, which is a very exhaustive explanation of Krishna conscious philosophy as taught by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Another of his little books is called Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, His Life and Precepts. Srila Prabhupada pointed out that this book was written in English and sent out by Bhaktivinoda Thakur to different libraries throughout the world, one of which was McGill, a library in McGill University in Montreal in 1896, which was Srila Prabhupada's birth year. And he took that to be significant, that this little book, which was the first foray of pure bhakti philosophy outside of India, appeared in the Western world the same year that Srila Prabhupada appeared on the planet. Now, this little pamphlet, actually, is a little summary of Krishna conscious philosophy. And it was published in the Bhakti Godhead magazine in 1969 by Srila Prabhupada's disciples with his approval. And so my little summary here will be based on that pamphlet and by on other writings of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. But we'll begin with a verse from the Chaitanya Charitamrita from Madhya Lila, chapter 6, text 178. In this chapter, Lord Chaitanya is talking with Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. He was a great scholar in the early 16th century. He was in charge of the Puri temple. And he was a Mayavadi. He was impersonalist at this time. But he was very warm-hearted toward Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and Lord Chaitanya converted him to pure bhakti. So this is this conversation. And in this conversation, Lord Chaitanya speaks about Vedanta, the real meaning of Vedanta philosophy, of Vedanta Sutra. So he says here in text 178, the essence of Vedanta philosophy, Bhagavan sambandha bhakti abhideya hoy. Prema prayojana vede tina vastu koi. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the central point of all relationships. Acting in devotional service to Him is one's real occupation. And the attainment of love of Godhead is the ultimate goal of life. These three subject matters are described in the Vedic literature. And Prabhupada has a little purport here. Bhagavad Gita also confirms this statement in Bhagavad Gita 15:15. Vedaish cha sarvair ahameva vedya. The actual purpose in reading the Vedas is to learn how to become a devotee of the Supreme Lord. The Lord Himself advises, Man mana bhavamad bhakto madhyaji mam namaskuru. Text 34 of the 9th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Which means one should simply think of Krishna, become his devotee, offer one's obeisances and worship him. Therefore, after studying the Vedas, one must then execute devotional service by thinking always of the Supreme Lord, Manmana, becoming his devotee, worshipping him, and always offering him obeisances. This is called Vishnu Aradhana. And it is the supreme occupational duty of all human beings. It is properly discharged in the Varnashram Dharma system, which divides society into Brahmacharya, Grahastha, Vanaprastha, Sannyas, and Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, and Shudra. This is the whole scheme of the Vedic civilization, but this institution is very difficult to establish in this age. Therefore, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu advises that we not worry about this Vedic system of Varnashram. Rather, we should take directly to the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra and simply hear about the Supreme Personality of Godhead from pure devotees. This is the process recommended by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and this is the purpose for studying the Vedas. Om Jnana Tamarandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Mena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. As born in the darkness of ignorance, my spiritual master Srila Prabhupada opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances unto him. So the reason I read this verse is because in this verse, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he speaks of three elements of philosophy or of devotion. Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojan. And this division is reflected in Bhaktivinoda Thakur's summary of Krishna conscious philosophy. So I'll now recite this one verse in which he gives these 10 basic points of philosophy, and then we'll expand on them a little bit. And this way you'll get a very nice overview of the Gaudiya Vaishnava philosophy. So the verse is contained in a companion book to the Lord Chaitanya's Life and Precepts, which is called the Gauranga Lila Smarana Mangala Stotram, which are the auspicious verses for the remembrance of Lord Chaitanya's pastimes, which was also sent to McGill University. And the verse goes like this. Amnaya praha tattvam hadamiha padamam sarva shaktim rasabdhim tad binangshangs ca jivan prakritika valitan tad vimuktangs ca bhavat veda veda prakasham sakalam apihade sadhanam shuddha bhaktim sadhyam tad pritimevet upadishit janan gora chandra swayamsa. So the meaning of that this verse is that if we want to understand the subject matter, transcendental subject matter, which is beyond the purview of our senses and mind, we have to go to the Vedic literature, which is based on the Vedas, which are spoken by the Lord Himself, and those literatures which are following the Vedas. That's where we say Vedic literature, such as the Puranas, the Bhagavad Purana, and Bhagavad Gita and other literatures. These are called revealed scripture. They're beyond the mistakes and illusions of ordinary knowledge. So then that's the first point, that epistemology, very important, means the science of knowing. How do we know what we know? How do we gain knowledge? And how do we gain knowledge that is not covered or not infected with the impurities and imperfections of our ordinary senses and mind? And that is the process of descending knowledge coming from originally from Krishna and purely through his representatives. So that's the first point. And here's the other 9 points. Praha tattvam hadamiha padamam. Hari or Krishna, this is point number two, actually, is the Supreme. He is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Supreme Absolute Truth. Compared to what? Well, other things that are sometimes thought to be supreme, for instance, the devas or the demigods. Some people worship Shiva. Some people worship Indra, the sun god. Some people don't think there is any god or any gods, and they simply worship money, or they worship their own body, or they worship some politician, a rock star, or whatever. But you always, the tendency is for us to look to a more powerful figure and to offer homage and to try to emulate that person and to try to get some benediction from that force or that power. But here it is said that the Supreme is a person, a supreme person, and that person is Hari. Now, how is it he is defined? Bhagavan. Srila Prabhupada would point out Parashara Muni, the father of Vyasadeva, gave a nice definition of Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Aisharasya, Samagrasya, Viryasya, Yashashakshaya, Jnana Vairagya Girashchaiva, Shannam Bhaga Itingana. These six opulences or attributes must be present in full for a personality to be regarded as God. It must have infinite Aishwarya, means wealth or controlling power. It comes from the word Ishwara. Ishwara means a controller, a God. So it means complete control. We have a little bit of control over our little environment or family, or even maybe we're mayor of a city or something. But certainly we don't have total control. There's always someone above us. And if we don't think there's anyone above us, there's always Mother Nature to cut us down with time. And eventually we have to lie down and surrender and die. So we're not the supreme controller by any means. But Krishna is. And Viryasya means power. He exhibited that in so many ways in doing his pastimes on this planet. He created all the universes. He lifted Govardhan Hill. He clearly has infinite strength. Aishwarya Samagra Viryasya Yashashak and Shriya. So Yasha is fame. Who can be more famous than God? Even if people may not know the name Krishna, everyone has some conception of God. So God is the most famous. And actually through the thousands and thousands of years, we find that Krishna's pastimes, his qualities, his attractiveness has kept him all famous. And Shriya. Shriya means beauty in this context. All attractive beauty. In the pastimes of Krishna, his beauty and his sweetness overwhelms the power and the majesty. And this is why Krishna is attractive to all. He can reciprocate all different rasas, which we'll get to in a minute. So there's this beauty and sweetness and jnana and vairagya, knowledge and detachment. Since he's complete in himself, Atmarama, he doesn't need anything from the outside. He's totally detached. He showed this in the rasa dance when he disappeared from the gopis, isn't it? And in many other ways, Krishna isn't completely indifferent. And yet, he reciprocates with our devotion as we want to. So he's not indifferent in that regard. When we are not indifferent to him, he's not indifferent to us. The more that we relate to him in love and devotion, the more he will reciprocate with us. And of course, knowledge, who can be more knowledgeable than Krishna? He knows everything. He says in Bhagavad Gita, I know everything past, everything present, everything future, all that will come to be. And so through his expansion also as Paramatma, he knows all of our hearts and all of our thoughts. So this is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna's two Bhagavan Swayam. Even other personalities of Godhead are not quite as, don't manifest all the opulences. Even the Narayans and the Vishnus don't manifest all the beauty and sweetness and opulences that Krishna has. So as we learn from the Srimad Bhagavatam, ete changsa kalapungsa, Krishna's tu Bhagavan Swayam. All the other manifestations of Godhead, Leela avatars, Lord Nrisimhadev, even Ram, they're all ansha, plenaries, some of them, a complete of Krishna. And Krishna's tu Bhagavan Swayam. So then, so that's the first proposition. The next one is that he's invested with infinite powers. What does it mean to have all of these qualities if you don't use them? So the way in which Krishna manifests these opulences is through his shaktis, different shaktis. And therefore it says, sarva shaktim, he is full of all different powers. So let's just enumerate those quickly. We basically he has these three divisions. of external, marginal, and internal energies. The external energy is, we're very familiar with that. The earth, water, fire, air, all these hard things, the gases, you know, our bodies, all of this is the external energy. It's dead. There's no life there. This is the called jada. But it's animated, just like our body is animated. But why? Because within each body, there is the higher, the tatastha shakti, is the marginal energy, which is by nature spiritual. And that's the jiva shakti. Krishna explains this in Bhagavad Gita 7th chapter. There's the eight energies, earth, water, fire, air, ether. That's the gross energy. Then the subtle energies, mind, intelligence, ego. And then that's because separated material energy. Above that, apare mitastanyam prakritim vidhime param. You should know that this parashakti, that's us. That's the living entities who are exploiting this universe, sustaining it, just like we're sustaining the body. If we leave the body, it's called death. The body disintegrates, has to be burned, thrown away, buried somehow. So just like we're sustaining the body, all the jivas are sustaining this whole universe. And of course, Krishna is there, a super soul. He's sustaining it also. So that's the different, external shakti, the lower shakti, the middle shakti, or the tatastha shakti, and then finally the internal energy of Krishna, which manifests the spiritual world and all of the things in it and the relationships. This is also divided into three. I don't want to get too technical, but there's the pleasure energy, the existence energy, and the knowledge energy. So by his energies, Krishna is acting and relating in this world. Shishi Gornataya ki jai, Shri Rukmini Dwarkadish ki jai, Shri Jagannath Baladev Subhadraji ki jai. So this world manifests through these energies is a reflection of that internal world, of the internal energy. The internal energy of Krishna, the spiritual energy, manifests what we know as the spiritual world, Goloka Vrindavan, with that idyllic scene there in the part of Goloka that's like Vrindavan on this world, with the cows and the cowherd boys and the beautiful gardens and the forests, and all of that is reflected here. And the relationships that we have, they're also reflections of that original relationship. So this is the energy of Krishna. But he's not just a powerhouse, you see. He's also a person. And so the next quality, and this is all part of Sambandha, by the way. This is Sambandha means the relationships. Who is God? Who are we? What is this world? And what are the relationships? That's called Sambandha. So it's described there that Krishna, the next quality, the next point is number four, that Krishna is an ocean of rasa. Now, rasa is relationship. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he defines it, the ecstatic principle which comprehends the various forms of love and affection which can be exhibited between the living being and the Lord. So we can know a little bit about those rasas by our little perverted reflections we have. In many ways, we can understand a lot about God by contemplating ourselves. So that love that, say, a mother feels for a child, that is a force. It is something that all of us have experienced. You can witness its effects, you see. Very powerful love and care and attention that's given between a mother and a child. So that's there in the spiritual world in its perfection. And we can read about that, hear about that in Mother Yashoda's love for Krishna. As soon as she's worrying. Every mother knows a child disappears for a few moments. Oh, is he okay? Right? Suppose you have a three-year-old. Where is he? What is he getting into trouble? Did he cut himself? Is he running into the street? Help! Living in. This worry is transcendentally realized in Mother Yashoda. You read the 10th canto, you will see how she's in total anxiety when he goes to the forest. He has no shoes. He's walking on the path there, and he may, you know, cut his foot or something. Who knows? A snake may come, you know, or some wild animal. She always says, Balaram, you protect him. So you read that and you see, oh, this is the perfection of motherly affection and love. And so all of these rasas, we have friendship, you see, and friend. You'll see the perfect friendship there with Krishna and his friends. Balaram, a little more protective. He has younger friends who are looking up to him, medium friends who, on an equal level, they wrestle with him. You see, this is the ideal, this is the archetype, and we're having the reflection or the shadow. And what is the problem with ours? They end. The problem is that it doesn't go on forever. I remember when I was a child, I went to camp. I must have been about 8, 9 years old. And there was one boy there that I absolutely, I was just in love with him. I had to play with him. He was my friend. And if he wasn't there, I would wail and I would practically gnash my teeth and rend my clothes, you know. Where is Stefan? You know? And the counselors were amazed. They'd never seen that much affection between the kids before. And, you know, I was playing checkers with him, whatever it was, you know. And time went on. Next year, somehow, it wasn't there anymore. I went my way. I grew up a little bit. He had other friends. I didn't see. Disappeared. Just evaporated. And we've all had experience like that. You have a certain intense affection. It can be man, woman. It can be friends, whatever. But it dissipates over time because you change. This is a world of change. And that's the great tragedy in this world, that any relationship we have cannot last. So the original relationship with Krishna, once we discover it through the process of devotion, it never ends. It's for eternity. We have our eternal friend, our eternal master, our eternal child or lover, and that goes on for eternity with unlimited varieties and pleasure. So, he's an ocean of rasa. Now, this is a big topic. Obviously, this is a little summary. But these rasas are overseen and mediated through the Ladini Shakti personified as Srimati Radharani. It's a deep science. But the rasa is the key to bhakti. The whole idea in bhakti is to awaken this original relationship with Krishna, which we all have. Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema Sadhika Bunoi. That this eternal perfection of loving exchange with Krishna is there in each of us. It just needs to be awakened, chiefly through the process of hearing and chanting the holy name and other transcendental sound vibrations. So, that's the beginning of Sambandha. Then the question is, who are we? Now we've learned that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Absolute Truth, is a person, Hari, Krishna. He's full of all kinds of energies, and he relates in unlimited rasas with his loving devotees. Now, who are we? That's the next point. Point five. Tadbinangshangscha jivan. Vibhinna angsha. Vibhinna means separated. We never merge with God. It's not that we become one in identity and lose our identity. The very first instruction of Krishna in Bhagavad Gita says that. My dear Arjuna, these soldiers here, these kings, and you and I, we've eternally existed in the past. We exist now and we will exist in the future in our separate identities. So this vibhinangsha, very small particle of Krishna. But just like the sun ray has the qualities of the sun, right? If you go out into the sunshine where there's a lot of sun rays, you'll have some heat and you'll have light. Those are the main qualities of the sun, emanating heat and light. But of course, it's very minute. If the sun was here, we'd all be burned to a crisp instantly. So, but the sun and the sun rays have the same quality, but the quantity is different. So we have the same qualities of Krishna, but they're covered now and very minute. They're always minute, but they're even more minute than they should be because of our conditioning. So, but still, we are eternally separate identities, intrinsically the same as Krishna qualitatively, but quantitatively different. So that's vibhinangsha. Now, how did we become separated? Well, we're separated in two ways. One is that we're eternally separated because but we're also now separated in interest. We've forgotten him. This is our whole problem. We've turned away from Krishna and we've become, and that's the next point, prakritikavalitam. Prakritikavalitam means swallowed up by Maya Prakriti, by the illusory energy. For millions and millions of births, we've forgotten our relationship with Krishna, with God, and we're trying to relate in this world on the basis of these rasas, the basis of these relationships. Trying to be all-powerful and beautiful, attractive, and failing, because that's not our constitutional position. So that's the next point. Prakritikavalitam. This is our problem. We have been swallowed up by the illusory energy, and we're thinking there is no God, or God is out there, and we have all kinds of illusory or mistaken ideas about who the Lord is, if there is a God, and so forth. So we need knowledge. We need real knowledge. And this was Srila Prabhupada's main mission, was to provide that pure knowledge through his movement, chiefly through his books, and through his own personality and speaking, and those who are following him. It's the same knowledge coming down for millions of years. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur was a very important a preacher of that knowledge, which Srila Prabhupada has also given. So, Prakati Kavalitam. Now, how are we bound up? Well, it's described here, there's a double encasement. Okay, we have the subtle body and the gross body. The gross body we can all see, you see. And the subtle body is a little harder to see, but you can see its effects. The gross body is what we see in the mirror. Subtle body is the mind, intelligence, and ego. When we die, it just means the bodies become dysfunctional. Finally, it wears out. Every machine must wear out. Extremely complex machine we have here. And eventually, it's a remarkable machine. It repairs itself. It keeps the balance. The temperature is the same. It's actually amazing the way it's been engineered. But ultimately, as every machine does, it breaks down. And at that point, as death takes place, the subtle body separates from the gross body. And all the thoughts and the desires and things we've experienced in this lifetime, that's what's going to be our state of consciousness. And that carries us to the next body. It's described very distinctly in the 15th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. So this is our situation. And until we turn our attention toward the Supreme Lord and His devotion and begin to reestablish that relationship, we must continually transmigrate from one body to another. And so the basic mission of the human being, as understood in the Vedic culture, is to get liberation from this entrapment in the gross and subtle body with all of its attendant pains and sufferings. You know, with a little bit of pleasure here and there to keep us bewildered and keep us going back for more. It's really a huge change-up. You know, you have a change we call like a bait and switch. You know, bait and switch. You're attracted to buy something and you go to the place to buy. Oh, it's not there, but we have one just as good over here. Right? It's called bait and switch. This is Maya's trick. Come and try to enjoy. Try to enjoy. You can be happy in this world. And you do it life after life, and you're consistently kicked by the material energy. Old age, disease, and death. Old age, disease, and death. And in the middle, birth. You know, before all of it is very painful. So we have to wake up. And that's the next quality, or the next point. Tadvimuktangstabhavat, some of the living entities become liberated by Hari. It's all Krishna's doing. What is Srila Prabhupada giving? He's sent here by Krishna. The great saints and sages who give us knowledge, the Vyasadeva himself, all of them are simply agents of Krishna. It's Krishna himself who is concerned. He's feeling for it because we're his parts and parcels. Let's think of, you know, sons and daughters, beloved children, beloved friends that are now suffering in illusion. If you have a friend who or a beloved son who is in a very crazy state of mind and is walking around on the street suffering like crazy, and you have a way of helping him, wouldn't you do that? Of course you would. So Krishna's way of doing it is he sends his emissaries. Or he comes himself, as he did with Bhagavad Gita, periodically. Always, always, always to give knowledge and to give dharma. So that the living beings can be reformed and stop their suffering. So, tadvimuktans, it means tadvimuktans, by him, they are liberated, bhavat. And then, so that's the seventh point. Yes. And how does that happen? So Srila Prabhupada explains in many places, by the association of a Vaishnav. One cannot really get a linkage to Krishna or an understanding of real bhakti. We were talking about bhakti, reciprocal, loving relationship, a service, unless one comes in touch with someone who is a Vaishnav, who is in that mood. And so it is said there's a seed there. Brahmanda brahmete kon bhagyavan jeev guru krishna prasare pai bhakti lata bij. Bij means seed. So all of the souls were wandering in the different universes. You know, I mean, we're in different bodies, up and down the species. I mean, it was a big sojourn, a stay in this world. And the fortunate soul, by the mercy of Krishna and Guru, the Krishna himself and the spiritual master. It is said, by the mercy of Krishna you get Guru, by the mercy of Guru you get Krishna. But the first thing you get is the seed. And that seed takes the form of transcendental instructions and instructions on the holy name. chanting the holy name. Here, take this holy name and chant. You see, take Krishna. Now, it's up to us to take that seed and water it. If someone gives you a seed to plant and you can grow some nice flower or vegetable, well, that's fine, but you have to take care of the seed. You have to water it, you have to pull out the weeds, you see, and you have to nurture it so that it grows nicely. So in the heart, the seed of bhakti is a desire seed. It's a desire which is covered over and confused by so many other seeds at first, but which is, if you water it nicely by hearing and chanting and other processes, it will start to fructify, and then you'll have these two things pulling on you. We all have experience. Over here is Maya. I have so many habits, I can't give up. But over here, I really want to go to the Krishna temple and see the beautiful deities, take prasadam and associate with the devotees. You see? This is, we all have that, this pull. So that means there's two or three or more latas or creepers growing. So if we're serious, the more sincere and serious we are, the more we'll try to pull out those other weeds and or starve them. Don't water them so much, you know, with attention and feeding, and just water that nice bhakti lata, creeper which grows ultimately and produces the beautiful fruit of love of God, of which you can taste eternally. So that's how we get released, by the mercy of someone who is released. And Krishna himself explains, Daivyesha Gunamahi Mama Maya Dadottiya. On our own, this material energy is too powerful. We're bound up by the gunas, you know, the three gunas. Guna means rope as well as quality. And you can't, the bound cannot free the bound. There has to be someone who's unbound. And that's the pure devotee who gives the instruction. And we surrender to that instruction. That to the degree that we do, we are freed from Maya. And then we have this wonderful philosophy which reconciles so many other streams of philosophy Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave us. Achintya Beda Beda Tattva. It says here, Beda Beda Prakasham Sakalam Api Hare. That everything is simultaneously one with and separate from the Supreme Lord Krishna. Now, how is that? Well, how is it one with us? Just like, you know, Madhvacharya, great preacher in what, I think the 11th century or so. He emphasized the difference because he was fighting, you know, tooth and nail philosophically with Shankaracharya and the Mayavadis, which were saying, no, it's just one. We are one with the Lord. We are Brahman, and he is Brahman, and ultimately we can become Brahman and become God or the Supreme. So Madhvacharya, he emphasized two, no, the soul is eternally minute and, you know, helpless, in this image, and Krishna is, God is supreme like that. Very important point. In fact, in one sense, we are one. As I explained, we're one in quality. Our relationship with Krishna can never be really broken. We can forget it, but we can't break it because we're intrinsically part and parcel of Krishna, Mamai Vanksha. He claims us, you see. So, in one sense, we're one. This energy that we see around us, it is also Krishna's energy. Krishna says, Rasoham apsukantaya pabasmi shashi shuryayo. I am the taste of water, the light of the sun and the moon. I am the sound of the ether, the ability in man, you see. I am the fragrance of the earth. So, nothing is separate from God because everything is his energy. So, in that sense, it's one with him. But in a very important sense, it's different because it's not part of his intrinsic personality, you see. He has his own identity in the spiritual world. Goloka eva nivasati akilatma bhuto. Right now, he's simultaneously enjoying in Goloka Vrindavan his pastimes with Radharani and the gopis and the coward boys. And he's also simultaneously in everyone's heart and on all the atoms. So everything that we see is simultaneously one with and different from the Supreme Personality of God. And so we should never think that, you know, we've been abandoned by God. No matter where we are, there's no inch, there's no angstrom unit that is separate from the personality of Godhead. Krishna is always right with us. It's simply a question of how much we want to approach him and turn toward him. That's the meaning that you can always, everywhere, at any time, chant the holy name and have the presence of the Lord with you. So, now all of that is by way of sambandha. All of those 8 points. Remember how the knowledge, where do you get the knowledge from? From the Vedas. It says that Krishna is God. He is a full of all different shaktis and energies, and he's an ocean of rasa, personal relationship. We are his part and parcels. Many of us, right here in the material world, we're bound up in illusion and suffering. But there is a way to be liberated, by the process of devotion. And everything is simultaneously one with and different from Krishna. That's all sambandha. If we understand that, then there's a process. How can we realize this, and what is the goal? So the process is, and this is called abhideya, a pure devotional service. Now, the reason is very simple, is that because we've forgotten Krishna and turned against him, we are now engaged in service. This is our nature. We have to serve. If we don't want to serve anyone else, then we'll simply serve our senses and our own mind. You see, this is a very lonely, selfish way of being, but you can be like that. Or you serve your wife, the wife serves the husband, everyone serves the children. Children grow up, they'll serve the father, then you have to serve the boss. Everyone is serving, but the reciprocation is imperfect. You can never have the complete reciprocation you're looking for until you turn that original service attitude toward the Krishna who can reciprocate infinitely with us. So that pure devotional service is the only means of attaining the final goal. You can get a simulacrum. You can get a kind of a feeling of liberation through the process of jnana or the process of yoga, you see. But it's not complete because it doesn't cure the ultimate seed of the tree of the material world, so to speak. And that is our false ego, our sense of separateness from the Supreme Lord, our sense of selfishness that everything revolves around me. You see. But you see, from day one, as soon as you become a little humble, you bow down and you start serving the Guru and Krishna, your false ego is getting a good pounding, isn't it? Oh, I'm not so great, actually. I'm not God. You know, as soon as you walk in the temple. It's so wonderful, and it's practically painless. Oh, there is the beautiful Lord. He's so glorious, you see. And as soon as you feel like that and bow down a little bit, immediately you're greater than the greatest yogi. Because the yogis who are working so hard, drilling the respiration, trying to control the senses, getting their siddhis or powers. They're not working on the false ego. They're becoming more proud. You see, they're becoming, you know, oh, come on, you can't walk on water. I can. Can you read minds? No, I can't. You see, the siddhis make you more puffed up. You're less likely to be surrendered unto the Lord if you get involved in something like that. I've met people like that, you know, not real yogis, but someone who's getting a little bit of power from, you know, pranayama and so forth. It doesn't really make you devoted to the Lord or recognizing the actual sambandha or the reality. You can get just as falsely puffed up in yoga as you can in by, you know, making $1 million or something, you know. It doesn't at all help you. You have to come in touch with a real devotee so that you can pick up the clue there. So the process of devotion, of course, is many-fold, but often we divide it into these nine processes: Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, hearing about the Lord, hearing about Vishnu, chanting, just like we had a wonderful kirtan, you see. And from that hearing and chanting comes remembrance. Remember, it's our forgetfulness of Krishna that's our problem. So remembrance is the cure. And that remembrance is furthered and nourished by hearing and chanting. And of course, then comes padasevanam, serving the lotus feet, worshipping the deity, archanam, you know, prayers and humble submission, and ultimately making friends with the Lord, having no separate interest and surrendering everything. These nine processes Prahlad Maharaj defines in his verses, and they're explained in detail. And that's expanded by the devotees, by Rupa Goswami in his Nectar of Devotion. You can read the Handbook of Devotion, 64 different elements. All of that is the abhideya, is the process to systematically, scientifically awaken our original love for Krishna. And that is the goal. The final point is a pure love for Krishna. It's described another little summary verse, which has a little different angle on it, of Lord Chaitanya's philosophy, talks about that, where Asurub Damodar, Lord Chaitanya's most intimate associate, he says, Aradyo Bhagavan Vajeshatanayas Tad Dhamma Vrindavanam Ramyakachidupasana Vradavaduvargena Yakalpita Srimad Bhagavatam Pramanam Amalam Premapamato Mahan Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu Matamadak Tatradana Naparaha. Here he says, Arajo Bhagavan. So if you understand these things, then you should worship Bhagavan. Arajo Bhagavan. Then one may say, okay, who's that? Vajesha Tanaya. Not any Bhagavan. There are unlimited Bhagavans, you know, manifestations of Krishna. But specifically, according to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in his line, the son of the king of Braja. In other words, the son of Nanda Maharaj, Krishna in Vrindavan. And one should also worship and regard the Vrindavan Dham by pilgrimage and by remembrance and so forth. Also holy. Then you may say, well, how? How should I worship? He says, Ramya Karachad Upasana Vrajavadu. The way of the gopis is the highest form of worship. This absolute unmitigated love and devotion for Krishna, as shown by the gopis, is taught by Mahaprabhu as the ultimate form of worship. And then you may say, yeah, you may say all that, but what's your evidence? He says, Srimad Bhagavatam Pramanam Amalam. The supremely pure and evidence, pramana, is the Srimad Bhagavat Purana, is the basis of Lord Chaitanya's philosophy. And then you say, okay, suppose I accept that. What do I get out of it? What's the goal? Prema Pumarto Mahan. Prema, pure love for Krishna, is itself the final arta or goal for human life. You know, generally they say there's these four goals. Dharma, arta, kama, moksha. You become religious. Yes, I want to prosper in this world. I'll go to church. I'll go to temple, make a little offering, and then we'll get, you know, prosperity, health for the family, so forth. And then, sure enough, if you're pious, you prosper in this world. That's arta. Dharma, arta. It's kind of the Puritan ethic we had in America. You know, work hard, go to church, and make this world into the kingdom of God, into heaven. So that's called dharma, arta, and the result is, yes, kama, we can enjoy. Dharma, arta, kama. Dharma, arta, kama. And then generally people become a little, you know, irreligious. They forget about dharma. Arta and kama. Arta and kama. You know, just make money and spend it. Make money and spend it. It's a very low kind of life, but that's what's going on. Then if you get beat over the head by the material energy for a while, you know, you say, oh, this is too much. Isn't there some release? Yes, moksha. You can get moksha. Okay, no more. Let me give it up, give it up, give it up. And then by austerity, you know, you try to detach yourself from these things. No more. You know, I'm going to go off to the hills and the forest and separate. This is called moksha, or mukti. But it's also a selfish desire. I will be relieved of pressure. I will get release. You know, I can't take it anymore. This is not really bhakti. It's called mukti kama. It's the desire for liberation, for relief, you see. So all of these are lower artas. They're called different goals of life. But prema is the fifth goal. It's the actual purpose of human life. It's our natural state, is this loving devotion. And it's not easy, if you will, to reawaken that, because we're so used to engaging. The prema has become kama. You see? We all have this loving relationship, but now the prema has become kama. And this brings up a beautiful verse by Krishnadas Kaviraj in the fourth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, of Chaitanya Charitamrita Adi Lila. He describes the essential difference between kama and prema. And both of them involve strong desire, you see? But there's a world of difference, just as there's a world of difference between iron and gold. They're both metals, but they're very different. So he says, Atmendriya priti vancha tade bali kam. Krishnendriya priti icha dare prem nam. So Atmendriya priti vancha means the desire to satisfy your own senses, that's called kama. Krishna says, that's the main enemy in this world. It covers our knowledge, you see, and brings so much suffering. So that kama, we don't want the kama, right? It's not that we want to try to satisfy our desires. You can never satisfy them. It's just like pouring a ghee on the flame or gasoline. The more you try to satisfy your desire, the more the desire flames up. It may be satiated for a short time, but then again it comes back. So, but Krishnendriya priti icha dare prem nam. The desire to satisfy Krishna's senses, that's called prema. And that's defined, Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam Bhakti Ruchite. That using these senses to serve the master of the senses, Krishna, that's prema. And the fact of the matter is, the mystery of bhakti is, the more that you forget about your own desires, your own separate desires and your little pains and pleasures, and you think of Krishna's desire and the spiritual masses, which is none different, the happier you be, the happier you are, the more satisfied you are. It's just like watering the root of a tree, you know, or putting nice foodstuffs in the stomach. The whole body becomes nourished and happy. Senses become enlivened. So this is the truth, is that since we're part and parcel of Krishna, when we act in the same way as the hand acts in the service of the whole body, then the hand is pleased and the body is pleased. But when the hand is doing its own thing, oh my goodness, you know, I've got to control it. What was that movie? It was Strangelove, Dr. Strangelove, where he couldn't control his arm, remember? Kept going up. There's a serious problem there, you know, if your senses are not under your control. So we're like the hand or the arm that is out of control, or the finger, and we have to be, you know, put in a separate spot, like the material world. So we want to come back into the, under the control of Krishna, loving control, you know, and in this way we'll achieve the goal of life. So just a quick review again, once again. The 10 basic points of Krishna conscious philosophy. The first and foremost, very important, to gain absolute knowledge about these questions. Who am I? Why am I suffering? What's the goal of life? Who is God? You have to go to the absolute source of knowledge, the Vedas and Vedic literatures spoken by the Lord themselves. The first point is that Hari, or Krishna, is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He's a reservoir of all energies, material, spiritual, and jiva energy, jiva shakti. And he is also a reservoir of all loving relationships, personal relationships called rasa. We, as souls, are the separated shakti, minute particles of Krishna's jiva shakti. And we are simultaneously one with indifferent. And many of us, we're all swallowed up by Maya, we're all bound up, but it is possible to be liberated through devotional service. Then again, next point is that everything we see is simultaneously, inconceivably, one with and different from Krishna. The process for realizing the truth of this knowledge and achieving the goal is pure devotional service, and the goal of that service is pure love for Krishna. Any comments or questions on these points? Sorry, it's a lot. Big nutshell that we try to fill there. Yes, go ahead. I'm sorry, can we keep the door closed? It's hard for me to hear. Okay, the demigods. The question is, the demigods don't understand that Krishna is supreme. Well, they do understand, but periodically, especially someone like Indra, and sometimes Brahma, they forget. They're all, like Indra's. There's a reason why he's called Indra, because his senses are very powerful, right? He's the king of heaven, and you read about his kingdom. You read about Indraloka, very opulent, you know. There's one that's, you know, that pastime where he's, you know, the dancing girls are there. He's sitting on his throne, enjoying an Indrapuri, and in walks Brahaspati, the spiritual master. Well, no matter who you are, when your guru walks in, you have to bow down, you know, and acknowledge the superiority of the spirit. He didn't, and you know, this is an example of Indra's bewilderment. Brahaspati walks out, and they can't find him. And suddenly Indra realizes his mistake, but it's too late. And his whole kingdom is conquered. Or, of course, you know, the more famous pastime, Govardhan Puja. What happened? Why did he lose his temper? Because he thought he was king. Oh, and it's just a little boy. He forgot. But then, later on, he remembered. He said, oh, what have I done? He comes down and offers his prayers to Krishna. So this is the nature of the demigods. The demigods are functionaries in Krishna's government. You know, he has a role to play. But in the process of performing that role, he may sometimes forget their position, and so Krishna has to bring him back. Same thing happens with Brahma, even in Brahma Vimohan Lila. So they're devotees, but they're not pure devotees. They're devotees who have a desire to control or have some desire for opulence, and so they get a post where they can have that, but at the same time perform a service. So the fact of the matter is that a pure devotee, you know, on this earth, who is wholly and solely sold out to Krishna's service, 100%, feeling himself, you know, helpless in relation to the Lord and simply doing his service, is in a better position even than Brahma and Indra, because it's not adulterated by you know, the tinge of the modes of nature. This is the nature of the demigods. Yes, Prabhu. If that's their pure motive, if that's their, yeah, motive.
And on the other hand, this pure devotee who is also trying to satisfy his own senses by serving God, because as you just mentioned that he will, his pleasure will increase more and more as he serves. So
right.
On a more intelligent level, he is trying to satisfy his own senses.
So there's a paradox there. Yes, this is a very good question. So the question is that, okay, the mukti kami, the one who is desirous of liberation only, it's easy to see that that's a selfish motivation. Prahlad Maharaj says, primarily, people are interested in their own spiritual advancement. They go off alone. They don't stay in the cities. Who wants to stay in the city, all of the noise and distraction? You know, I can't meditate, so let me go away, you see? But Prahlad says, I'm not going to do that, because as for me, I can always be immersed in bliss just by remembering your glories and chanting your glories, right? But I am lamenting for the poor souls here, so I'll stay and preach. That's the mood. So the psychology is that, okay, I know that if I try for liberation on my own, I'll ultimately fail. That's said in the scripture. And I won't feel any bliss. I'll be back down, you know, fighting the material energy, birth and death. So let me perform bhakti. And in this way, I'll serve Krishna's senses, but ultimately I know, I can read in the Shastra, how I'll enjoy like anything, you know? And so let me do that, you see? And in that way, it may seem like I'm not enjoying, but I know at the end there's a big payoff. So that's good in one sense, because it brings you into the idea of bhakti. But the fact of the matter is that the real pleasure of devotion comes when you really, really forget about your own pleasure. So there's a psychology to it. In other words, what does it mean to be absorbed in thinking of Krishna? When you read about the gopis who are, you know, recommended as the ideal, right, devotees, what is their mentality? Well, the Bhagavatam is there, you know. Of course, there's various tastes in which they're, you know, expressing things that seem to be, they're angry at Krishna or something, you know, but the next moment they're not. But really, the, you know, devotion is, they say, oh, Krishna, you're going out in the forest and walking on the pebbles there, and our hearts are all a flutter. We're thinking you're going to cut your foot, you know. Or Prabhupada explains, when they come back, they say, well, what did you bring us from the forest? Did you bring us some fruit this time? You know, what's it like? It's not like that. They're not thinking what they can get from Krishna. They're simply looking at him with love, you see, and he's appreciating that as an offering. So the whole thing is directed, the mind is absorbed literally in Krishna's feet, in, you know, the way the pearls are hanging there, and what is he saying, and what the sound of the flute. They're forgetting themselves, you know, and the clothes are getting loose and the hair is, you know what I mean? They're forgetting themselves. Otherwise, there's no way in the world they could run out in the middle of the night for the rasa dance. If they're thinking, oh, what will my father say? What will my brother say? Then they wouldn't go. They forgot about that. They're totally emotionally, you see. So now on our simple level, the training is that we think of the other. We think of the spiritual master. We think of Krishna. What do they want me to do? And we find that, well, they want me to do something I don't want to do. Okay? It runs up smack against our own little desires. So there you have the choice. Am I going to follow what I want to do, or am I going to follow what Krishna wants me to do? You know, it's simple. And if we're actually disciples or devotees, then we make a choice. Okay, let me do what Krishna wants me to do. And we find the wonderful thing about Krishna consciousness, like unlike any other, that if we do that just a little bit, you know, this chanting, it's so attractive. But you know, I got so many other things to do. Okay, I'm going to chant anyway. If you surrender and you begin to get into the habit and you have a discipline, regulated bhakti, then before long the chanting becomes very pleasurable. You get inklings of how pleasurable it can be. It's simply a question of uncovering the covering on our own senses. You see, so it's kind of an interesting mentality. Yes, I know that I'll get the greatest pleasure if I become a devotee, but the way you get that pleasure is forgetting all about your own pleasure and simply really becoming a devotee of Krishna. Okay, it's getting a little late. I don't want to keep you anymore. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Yeah, they want to merge. They want freedom from the pain. You know? But there's no security outside of Krishna's lotus feet. Right.
Thank you.